5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
This is Primetime on Football Friday. 1080 The Fan.
We're going to ring that championship bell.
60 minutes. Let's open up the whole can of kick ass and kill them all. Let the paramedics sort them out. Ready?
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back. Hope you're having a nice little Friday. It's your sports bros, Rob and Suk.
Sada.
I'm Rob. That's Big Suk right over there.
What's up?
Ryan Buckley is here.
Yeah, the baseball game starting right now.
We got the Dodgers and Padres here shortly. I believe it's an early game.
Yeah, flip over to that.
Well, early for West Coast.
West Coast.
Yeah, we got Joey Harrington coming up here at 5:30. We'll talk to him about, I don't know.
Something.
We'll find something.
Yeah.
Maybe the Ohio State game.
Maybe.
We'll see. Dan Lanning joined us earlier. Since we didn't have a show yesterday, he was on.
He didn't want to talk about the Ohio State game, but we made him.
That's right. We have viral video news coming up tonight in the club. And we'll see what else we get to. I wonder why more airlines can't be like Qantas. I don't know if you saw what they did recently, but...
No. Qantas is... The only thing I know about Qantas is from Rain Man. And I don't know if that's still the thing, but that was the whole bit in Rain Man. He says that Qantas is the only airline never to crash.
What?
You've never seen Rain Man?
Yeah, but it's been years.
Okay. Well, there's a whole bit in there where Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman being the autistic one, he's trying to get him on an airplane, and Dustin Hoffman refuses unless it's Qantas. And they're like in L.A. Qantas doesn't fly from like L.A. to Vegas. And Dustin Hoffman won't fly unless it's Qantas because Qantas is the only airline that's never crashed. So that was the whole bit. He just wants to fly Qantas, and he's trying to explain to him, we can't take the flight, and so they end up having to drive. Mm. So I don't know if since when that movie came out, which is probably like 89 or something, I don't know if Qantas has crashed since then, but at the time, Qantas was the only major airline not to crash.
Has he heard of Malaysian Air?
Boy, yeah, they lost a couple, like back-to-back.
Big ones.
Yeah.
Doozies.
Yeah, that's... I don't know about you, but I'm not real eager to... jump aboard a Malaysian airline flight or any Russian flight for that matter either. It's a little, they tend to get a bunch that go down.
All right, let's get to the hot 5 at 5.
Oh!
Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, jolly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it, that's very hot.
The hot 5 at 5 with Isaac and Sue. Brought to you on The Fan by Victor Rico's Mexican Food. Discover Victor Rico's new savory menu items. Order in-store, online, or get it delivered straight to your door at victorricos.com.
By the way, Dustin Hoffman is correct. Qantas has still never had a fatal crash.
Is that right?
Number 5.
Well, since the jet age began in 1959, wow. Modern aviation, right. Qantas has never experienced a fatal crash.
And they're not over here, are they?
They're Australian.
Australian.
Yeah. So I'm sure there's a flight that goes from Australia to L.A., but no, you're not jumping a Qantas from SeaTac down to Erie, Pennsylvania.
It's too bad. They could probably make a lot of money if they came here.
Or maybe they'd crash more. I don't know. They got Boeings, but yeah, it's never crashed.
Jets offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett stripped of play calling duties.
Thank God.
But he will remain the OC.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, that's weird.
I still find it weird that you fired the guy that was in charge of the one unit that's done its job. At least you demoted, kind of, the one dude who's in charge of the group that isn't performing.
The new play caller is a man by the name of Todd Downing. He says it's been the most unique week of his 20-year coaching career. The Jets host...
Why is that name familiar? Todd Downing, what did he do?
He played center field for the Angels.
There you go.
In 1989.
Right.
Number 4.
You don't remember Brian Downing?
I'm wondering why Todd Downing sounds so familiar.
Probably because you're thinking of Brian Downing.
He's sure, like, Downing Street is where the British Prime Minister lives.
Yeah, that's probably it.
So that, like, Downing Street? Like, that's the old... That's, like, their Pennsylvania Avenue.
Jets, Bills, Sunday. Old Pac-12 football tonight on ESPN. It's a late kick, 7:30. We get number 16, Utah, visiting Arizona State.
Does anyone know if Cam Rising is alive?
supposed to be playing tonight.
Yeah, they're saying he's back.
Is he saying yes? Dude, there is not.
He's back.
Not for long. Dude, that guy. There is not a more unreliable player in the history of college football than Cam Rising.
What's going on with him?
I don't know.
We think.
No one
is
knows.
He the Kawhi Leonard of
he
college
is.
Football?
Except Kawhi Leonard's really good, and Cam Rising, he's okay. I don't get it.
Better when he's playing, which is almost never.
Yes.
We also have a Big Ten matchup tonight between Northwestern and Maryland.
Toss out the records on that one.
God, no kidding. Who cares? But
Terps,
early on,
Cats, get excited.
It is scoreless, guys. No score. Russell Wilson, number three. Oh, yeah. Russell Wilson is back and active for the Steelers. He will be QB2 behind Justin Fields this week.
I think Russ is cooked.
despite a shoulder injury, Will Levis will start at quarterback for the Titans against the Colts. Giants will be missing wide receiver Malik Nabers again against the Bengals. He's concussed. And Niners running back Jordan Mason has a sprained AC joint suffered last night in Seattle. They say more tests coming on that.
The San Francisco 49ers, their entire roster is the Cam Rising of the NFL. It's just at any given time.
Well, it seems like that every year.
It is. What's going on? I don't know. I'm sure other teams are like this too, and maybe it's just that we just pay attention to the Niners out here, but I just feel that thing is a mash unit every single year with their football.
Did you see Brian Daboll having to answer questions about Malik Nabers going to a rap concert while he's in concussion protocol? He was real excited about that. We're going to keep it in-house. That's all I'm going to say.
Hey, at this Malik Nabers is the only thing they got going on offense. So.
Should you not be going to rap concerts when you're concussed?
It does seem number that the lights.
Like blinking lights. And
Travis Scott is only in town every so often. That's so, you know.
Malik Nabers is going to live his life. Or what did I say? Malik Nabers?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah, you got it.
That is his name. Live, damn it, live!
Oregon hosting Ohio State tomorrow on The Fan, 4:30 kickoff, first ever top five game at Autzen Stadium. There is a rumor that Ducks pass rusher Jordan Burch is hurt. The latest is that he was banged up in practice this week, but will play.
Yeah.
We don't have word on the nature of the injury or its severity.
Yeah, because the original, there were some rumors that he got carted off, and they're saying no, it was an exaggeration. And then Justin Hopkins, who had the original report, did say that he is going to play. So what that means, we'll find out come 4 o'clock.
Well, dude, he's been a monster.
Yeah, he's been a big deal.
He woke up. Yes. They woke him up.
Yes.
He's playing great.
And they're playing the varsity. I think that's going to be a big matchup. As good as this the D-line has played, Ohio State has a really, really good O-line, and this is going to be a big test for both sides.
I think we're playing the varsity.
Come too far together. Stop now.
Like that old lineman for us said that everyone was killing because he said he didn't love playing national spotlight games. He was first team All Big Ten last year, so I think he handles it okay.
Sounds weak to me.
First team All Big Ten. Guy sucks.
And we have a winner take all game 5 NLDS tonight. Yamamoto and the Dodgers hosting Darvish and the Padres. Mets await the winner. The Padres went down 1-2-3 in the top of the first.
Well, everyone had kind of written off the Dodgers because the pitching problems, and they went to a bullpen game last night and they rolled.
Yeah. Well, they scored. What was the final score of that game?
Eight nothing.
8-0. Yeah. Cease was terrible.
Yeah. So if Yamamoto can be what he was in the regular season and was healthy, it'd be a hell of a game.
They have moved up the Tigers-Guardians game 5 tomorrow in Cleveland. It was 5 p.m., but now it's going to be 10 a.m. This is our time due to possible inclement weather. I don't know about you, but I have a hard time watching that series, like being glued to that. Like, I can be glued to Padres-Dodgers. Mm-hmm. I was certainly glued to Royals-Yankees. And the Mets-Phillies was glue.
This glueable. One does not have that.
This doesn't have.
I have watched.
It's hard to watch.
I have watched a grand total of probably 4 innings of Guardians-Tigers.
I've even tried to turn it on, and I'm like.
I know. The second you turn it on, you're like, it just doesn't keep your attention.
No. And I don't know why that is.
There's no star power.
Yeah. It is. It's kind of a bunch
outside of Jose Ramirez.
Yeah. It is a lot
and
of
even
like
he. I like to watch him hit, but
you got the Quanner.
Dude, Dodgers-Padres is just chock full of stars.
Yeah. Well, and there's some piss and vinegar there, and the sides hate each other, and we got fans getting into it, and, it's good times.
There's your Hot 5 at 5. It's brought to you by Victor Rico's Mexican Food. Discover Victor Rico's new savory menu items. Order in-store, online, or delivered straight to your door at victorricos.com. Let's do a college football Saturday look-ahead coming up next, and then we'll get Joey Harrington in here to break down Ohio State, Oregon. That's coming up on The Fan. So this is the What Does the Fox Say
song. I don't remember this at all.
You don't?
No.
Yeah, this was big with the kids. I don't know what year. Maybe 17, 16, 17, 18, somewhere in there. Is that hot?
Don't know this one.
You want to sing along?
This just sounds like Baby Shark.
But it's by Norwegian sensation Ylvis.
Damn Norwegians. At least it's not the Swedes.
Well, this is a good question. What does the fox say? No one knows.
I think it's something like this.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Yeah, do we have... I'm sure you can look up what a fox sounds like.
I'll YouTube it.
Like a coyote. A coyote makes a little, like, yip kind of thing. See, when you originally said that, I thought that's what you were going with, is your...
My little dog growl?
Your little noises.
What does a giraffe sound like?
Yeah, I thought you were setting me up for that. I didn't know there was a whole...
No, it's a whole song.
There's a whole song.
We'll get Joey in here in 10 minutes. Let's look through the schedule in college
football. It's a pretty good week in college football.
Yeah, it's getting better. We've got Alabama, South Carolina at 9 o'clock. And I got to tell you, man, a lot of people hyping up that South Carolina game against who'd they play last week? They
played Ole Miss.
Oh, it was Ole Miss.
And
yeah.
Ole Miss thumped them.
And I watched that. Somebody owes me an apology, and they owe me my time back. Because South Carolina, their offense absolutely sucks.
Yeah, well, they bludgeoned Kentucky as a good defense, and then they had a nail-biting loss to LSU. And so some people thought that maybe South Carolina was going to be one of those sneaky teams, and Ole Miss gave them what for. But maybe just, you know, Alabama, how do they bounce back, you know? I mean, you just lost to Vanderbilt, for God's sakes. And then they got Tennessee coming next week. So maybe a look-ahead game where you just want to see Alabama kind of stabilize.
What about Washington, Iowa? That is the big nooner on Fox. Washington is at Iowa. Cool game.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, my buddy, who's a diehard UW guy, that's the one game he's choosing to go to this year. He was kind of excited about seeing some different stadiums in the Big Ten, and he's going to head out there.
Yeah, they have a cool environment. Going there,
Children's and Hospital, and all that.
Iowa needs this win. I mean, they're 3-2 overall and 1-1 in the Big Ten. Well, so this is a big one for them.
Well, that's the same thing for UW, right? I mean,
they just got a big win against Michigan.
Yeah, but I'm just saying for UW, who's now 4-2, like this was kind of a weird year for them. Some people thought that it was just kind of a throwaway year, but I mean, they dominated the Washington State and Rutgers game statistically, lost both of those games. Shouldn't have lost either one of them. And then you have the big win over Michigan. So I think for a lot of UW fans, they think that maybe the Michigan game, you know, you turned a corner, you finally got into a close game and pulled it out the other side. And coming up, I mean, this is a big stretch for UW because you got Iowa and then on the road back at Indiana, who's undefeated, and then USC and Penn State. So UW's schedule here is pretty gnarly. So dare I say, this Iowa game is big to kind of get this stretch off on the right
foot.
What
is the tougher game, at Iowa or at Indiana?
I think it's at Indiana, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah.
Iowa over-under still like 28?
I don't think it's that bad, but it's 30. Not it's not pretty.
So this, because Washington's defense has been pretty good.
Yes.
So is this a 6-3 game type of... What are we expecting here?
I'm looking here. The total is 41.5.
Oh, okay. That's higher than I thought.
It's higher than you thought. But let's not act like the Iowa offense. So they scored, if you take out the Troys of the world, right? They scored 19 against Iowa State and somehow found a way to lose that game at the end. They had no business losing it. They scored 14 against Minnesota and lost, and they had a 7 spot against Ohio State. So.
Whoa. So the most they've scored against Power 4 is 19?
19. They scored 40 against Illinois State. And
who's
they scored,
favored? You guys have a spread?
Yeah, I got it right here. They Washington
Iowa.
+3.
Yeah, I was favored by three. All right, good ball game.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this. UW's interesting to me in that we kind of wrote them off, but like I said, you know, this may be a better UW team than we think. And maybe by the end of the year, you know, because they finished the year against Oregon. And I think a couple weeks ago, everyone kind of looked at that and was like, it's a W. UW might be a little tougher out for some of these teams at the end. And they're not a playoff team, obviously, but with Penn State and Oregon in two of the last 3 weeks, UW may be a spoiler. If one of those teams, Penn State and Oregon, has one loss going into the end there, UW might be a spoiler type team. So just keep an eye on the Huskies over the next couple weeks.
Well, it's a big one at Iowa. We've got Texas, Oklahoma, the Red River rivalry.
Yeah.
12:30.
And this the spread,
always a fun game.
It's always, I'm surprised the spread is this high, because this is one game that no matter what always is close, and Texas is giving up two touchdowns.
Yeah, but don't you think that in typical Red River rivalry fashion, this will be a good game?
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
I do too.
To me, like, I know Oklahoma's not great. You give me 15 points in this game, I'll take Oklahoma and some points, because this game just finds a way to be funky every year.
This is the best. Ooh, is that out? Oh, this is the best game in college football, in my opinion. The Texas-Oklahoma game.
I can't disagree with that.
And the reason I say that is because it's the only game, besides Army-Navy, that is 50-50. The stadium, it's at a big stadium, and it's half one side fans and half the other side fans, and it's big rival, and it's awesome, and it's around the fair, and it's just, in every year, that seems to create an atmosphere that it's just a wild game.
Yeah.
I love Texas v. Oklahoma.
Couldn't agree more.
We also have Penn State USC 12:30.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this.
This game is in LA.
Well, I'm not a big Penn State guy. You know me.
Franklin's already complaining about travel.
Already.
Is he really?
Yep.
You're making me uncomfortable.
Apparently, they don't have a long enough or big enough runway in State College. They have to bus an hour away to Harrisburg to fly across the coast.
Yep.
But do they normally, like, what if they're going to play it?
Then they don't need a
plane, maybe? Yeah. I don't know.
Had that in Provo. If we were going to a smaller place, then we could fly out of Provo. If we were going across the country, we had to drive up to Salt Lake. So, which, by the way, having done that the majority of our big games, dude, get the cob out of your ass, Franklin.
It's not that big of a deal.
Oh, God, no. Most of the time we bust up to Salt Lake. Oh no.
You're making me uncomfortable.
I get a little nap on the bus ride.
How long is the bus ride?
Yeah, it's 45 minutes to an hour.
Hmm.
It's really,
Franklin said theirs is an hour.
Throw some headphones in and you take a little nap. It sucks on the way home, worse because you're tired, you're sore, and then you have to bus home. But dude, that is some of these coaches and the stuff they bitch about. I keep an eye on this because USC is not great, but USC's a solid team, and I just think Penn State every year is a giant pretender, and I want them to prove me wrong, and this is the sort of game where I could see them going out and stubbing their toe against a decent USC team and then having to make excuses for Aller and that crappy offense. So I'm intrigued by this one.
We have Arizona BYU, your BYU Cougars, 5-0.
The undefeated, soon-to-be top 10, Huckin' Hebrews. Thank you.
We have Ole Miss LSU. That is number 9 against
night game on the Bayou.
Yeah,
against number 13.
That's tasty, right
at
there.
At Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, I told you it's a great week.
Oregon State's taking on Nevada. Love the Beavs against the number there.
Who is it? The
number's 4.
Letdown spot. First time you're on the road in a month. You're coming off a double overtime win.
Nevada sucks.
Who's the coach? Is it the Chort or whatever? I'm trying to think.
What?
Of
either. Choate?
Choate?
Is that it?
I think it's Choate. Yeah, he was throwing some shade at the Beavs because they never travel. They only rode.
What?
They, every game for Oregon State, minus San Diego State, has been at home. So he kind of took a jab at him.
This is the Nevada coach?
The Nevada coach. He's like, how do I get that schedule?
Hey, you don't pee in Trent Bray's pot.
Oh, no.
That guy.
Let's go.
He'll rip your face off. looking here. Kansas State, Colorado. Hey, a big one in the Big 12.
Yeah.
4-1 Colorado hosting Kansas State. Now, what's interesting about this game, since they're both 4-1, you would think Kansas State's the better team, right?
Yeah.
They're the ranked team. Colorado's not. But if Colorado wins this game, they are 3-0 in the Big 12, and Kansas State will be 1-2.
Yeah, because,
K-State needs this.
Well, K-State does need it. And, you know, they came into Provo and they took an ass-whooping. So, and look, let's give credit where credit's due. Like, we can all sit there and criticize Dion because he's a jackass.
Oh,
but, hey, man, that's for where we thought they were going to go at the beginning of the year with that North Dakota State game. Give Colorado some credit.
They're better than a lot of people thought.
If they win this one, that's a big feather in their cap.
I was going to say, especially if they win this.
Yeah, but we've seen this from Dion before last year. You got to finish strong. It doesn't do any good to start talking S when you're five games into the season.
But you know,
I ran through that bull junk you wrote.
You know what's coming if they win this game on Monday.
Oh, God.
The ad nauseum Colorado hype.
Yep.
Oh,
unbelievable.
God. Buckle up.
Yep.
All right, coming up next, Joey Harrington joins us. We will get into Oregon, Ohio State.
You forgot Florida, Tennessee.
I don't care. Florida sucks.
Did you know, though, fun little fact, that Florida has won, I believe it's 18 of the last 20 of these games.
Really?
Florida,
against Tennessee. The Vols?
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, they ain't going to win tomorrow.
They own Tennessee.
What's the spread?
14, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Vols just coming off a loss?
I'll take Florida in the points.
Mm-hmm. You can have them. Joey Harrington joins us next for his weekly visit, but first, Buck has SportsCenter. Well, we finally made it to Ohio State week.
I know we had to slog through some stuff, but
here we are.
Well, it's a huge week in college football. It's the best week of the year, and this is the crown jewel of it.
And here's our friend Joey Harrington. I'm hearing rumors of something called the Heisman House.
That is a house that is occupied by that is fictionally occupied by Heisman winners. I was going to say that's occupied by fictional Heisman winners, but they actually won the award, unlike someone you're talking to. Yeah. And then they fictionally occupy a house. I actually just, I called Marcus to see if I could just crash on the couch for, you know, an hour and a half. And he's like, yeah, cool, no problem. Just don't, you know, don't get anything dirty.
What is the Heisman House? And is that, are you going to be there?
I am going to be there. Yeah, from 1:30 to 3 o'clock. It's like, what's the best way to describe it? An activation. Essentially they just bring the Heisman House to, I think they have six locations through the college football season this year, and one of the games they chose was Oregon, Ohio State. It's a, you know, fan activation, Q&A, fun pictures, you know, just all the goodness.
So, wait, so there's a bunch of Heisman guys and fans come and meet them and you?
No. There's just me, the guy who lost. Mm. And then, you know, fans come and do like college football stuff at the house. Yeah, no. They should call it the not Heisman House because, you know, I didn't win.
Do you need the runner-up to the runner-up to the runner-up of the 2000 Remington Award there as well? Because that is about as far away from the non-Heisman House as you can get.
Wait a minute. So you were the runner-up to the runner-up. So you finished fourth.
I think I finished fourth or fifth. I may have been.
Don't be inflating your losingness now. Yeah, okay. Did you finish fourth or did you finish fifth?
I think I was the runner up to the runner up to the runner up to the runner up. I think I finished fifth. But
okay, now you're just a total loser because those of us who finished fourth, you know, we you're not invited. No. You're not cool enough to be at the fictional Remington House. No. Because you finished fifth. Yeah. You have to finish fourth.
Yeah. I'm out.
You're out. I've told you the moment when I knew that I wasn't actually going to win the Heisman story, right?
Refresh.
We were at the opening night dinner. So we had just all flown in from Orlando for the College Football Awards. And then it's that Friday night before the Saturday dinner. And they introduced everybody. They introduced Eric Crouch from the University of Nebraska. They introduced Ken Dorsey from the University of Miami. They introduced Rex Grossman from the University of Florida. And they introduced Joey Harrington from Oregon State University.
Yeah, that's not...
Yeah?
That's
president of the Downtown Athletic Club stands up there and says, please welcome Joey Harrington from Oregon State University. And the crowd was like, we know that's not right. And I looked around and I was like, wait, so this whole weekend is free drinks? And I will have another one of those because I now know I'm not winning. So you know what? Party on you guys.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's one of those, just you just start drinking. It's a open bar and cheers.
Takes, yeah, but you're so right. That's
takes
a really
the pressure off.
That's a good tell.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you ain't
winning. Yeah. And everybody's like, how was the Heisman weekend? What was it like? I was like, man, it was an awesome party. Like Kenny and Rex and Eric, they were like all, you know, nervous, like, am I gonna win? Am I gonna lose? I was like, dude, let's have a blast. Like, this is gonna be awesome. So yeah, that's what happens That's probably why I was invited to the Heisman House, because they felt bad that they screwed things up 23 years ago.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be fun for you. So obviously you're going to the game.
I am going to the game. And it was one of those things where I was going down for the appearance, and I was like, well, I guess I might as well just stay for the game, right?
Yeah.
You know, can't just drive all the way down there and then not go. So, yeah, we're going to stick around and see what happens.
So what happens then? Do you just do the Ducks just give you tickets? Do they put you up in a suite? Like, how does it work?
Well, I'm not going to divulge those kind of state secrets to you. However, I called a buddy in the athletic department and just bought some tickets through them. So, yeah, I was like, I'll go to StubHub. And like, no, we've got a few extras here. So normally I would have just kind of gone to StubHub and said, hey, what do you got available?
Yeah. This one, though, I think those might be slightly inflated. Something tells me that this is one of the more expensive tickets in aughts and history.
Yeah, you know, I think ticket prices have come down a bit. But, I haven't been... You know what's funny is I haven't been to a game since COVID.
Oh, really? Really?
I haven't been to Autzen State, and that's why I felt okay with being like, hey, you know what? Hey, I'm going to be in town, and, I'm not asking for free tickets, but if there's something around, you know, I'd love to buy tickets like everybody else. Because every fall I've been on crutches since COVID.
Yeah.
And well, kids. I don't exactly want to be crutching around, you know, up and down the stairs, and this is the first year that I'm actually walking, so, hey.
Well, and you got kids like soccer games and stuff, and that stuff keeps you busy.
You're a dad.
It does.
You're a dad.
It does.
It has come down, because I want to say at the start of the week, it was $275 to get in the game for a pair, and right now it looks like maybe $195 without fees. $195 will get you in the nosebleeds.
With a seat, with an actual place for your butt? Because I was seeing $200 in standing room.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's not much difference. So standing room is, you can go in the absolute nosebleeds or standing. So with fees, you're probably looking, you know, more like $240, $250 a ticket to get in. So it's come down a little bit, but not much.
Okay, so here's a question for you that all of that we debated very heavily on Talking Ducks to Thursday afternoons at 3:00 on Root Sports. Is this the biggest game in odds and history?
Yes.
Yes. To me, it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Is this the biggest game in Oregon history?
No. No, I don't even think it's close.
I agree with that.
Okay. What if they win this game and then stumble the rest of the season? Is it still the biggest game in Austin history?
Mm.
See, that kind of goes back to...
Like, I'm going to say no there.
Yeah, I'm going to say no, because it's like what happened a couple years back when they beat Ohio State at Ohio State. But, you know, you got to capitalize on that. To me, and we were discussing this, I don't remember if it was last week or at the beginning of this week, I think the only thing that defines Oregon anymore, I think these little... I'm not saying this is a little game, but the, you know, beating Michigan, beating Oklahoma, these Ohio State, you've been there. To me, the only thing that this program is a defining game anymore is winning a national championship. I mean, you've played for two, you destroyed the defending national champs in the Rose Bowl. You've beaten Ohio State at Ohio State. You've beaten, you've beaten Michigan, you've beaten Tennessee on the road. I mean, you've played these games. So with the exception of maybe Bama or Georgia, but they're in the same class as Ohio State, who you've beat, I just don't think there's anything left for this program to prove outside of winning the whole thing. So while it's a big game, I think it's the biggest game that we've seen at Autzen, 2-3, win or lose, it doesn't define anything to me until you put a ring on your finger, because that's where this program has established itself.
I could not agree more. Yeah. I mean, that's the... I heard an interesting argument from our friend and colleague George Reister, who said that there's a difference between the game in 21, was it 21, 22, that where we went to the shoe and beat them. That win carried more significance because we truly hadn't had that type of win yet.
I think that's right.
Even though, you know, we stumbled down, you know, stumbled a couple weeks later, that game at the shoe is different than this game at Autzen. And I would agree. I don't know that I would agree with the importance of the game at the shoe, but I would agree with the, I don't want to say lack of importance, but the most important thing is winning a national championship. Yeah. And that's it. And that can be a cost. Even if you lose on Saturday, which I don't think they're going to, and I hope they don't, you can still win the national championship this year and lose tomorrow at Autzen.
Yeah. Correct.
And vice versa. You can beat Ohio State, and then if Ohio State beats you in the playoff, who gives two blanks that you beat them at Autzen Stadium? This is like when Georgia and Bama played in the SEC title game, and Bama got them, and then they played again in the playoff. Georgia wins, goes on and wins a national championship. Alabama doesn't get to sit there and be like, well, I guess we won the SEC championship game. Cool. Welcome to my national title ring. Like, so it's a huge game, but I just think for both schools, certainly Ohio State and Oregon has achieved this, regular season is just a vehicle to put yourself in position to get to the thing that the only thing that matters for top 10 programs.
I agree. I mean, and yeah.
Well, it's really...
Which begs the question, then, why... I'm hesitating to even ask the question, because I know the answer. Like, you know, why do we put such importance on it? But I know why, because it's freaking awesome. And it's like, this is the best. Like, this is a number two versus number three, the biggest game at Autzen ever. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, we could lose and still go on and win the national championship.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like, you know, when Michigan came to Autzen in 2003, the program had something to prove. When Oklahoma...
20 years ago.
Yeah, I know it. Yeah. I mean, it's like the evolution of program-defining wins, that you have them all, except for, as Suk said, the championship, right? So you win that game, you say, okay, we play some pretty damn good football out here out west, right? Okay, so then you host Oklahoma a couple years later, you win that game. Then it's like, okay, well, you win a couple of, they win a couple big postseason games, a couple Rose Bowls. You know, they beat Wisconsin, and they beat Florida State in the playoff. That was a program-defining win. You play for a couple of titles. You win on the road at Ohio State a couple of years ago. It's like, what other program-defining wins do you need? This one wouldn't be one. The two things that are cool about this weekend, one, it's just going to be a badass atmosphere, and this is why you get tickets to watch college football. I mean, it doesn't get any better than Ohio State coming to Autzen. The crowd's going to be crazy, and that's a blast. The second thing is you just get to there's no better litmus test to see where you truly are than these guys coming into your house. We don't really know what Oregon is so far, and you're damn sure going to find out tomorrow. And those are the two fun things about it. But it's nothing more than that, based on everything you guys said about the postseason. And you know, you can lose it and still have a tremendous year.
You literally hit the nail on the head. This is going to be an amazing atmosphere to celebrate Oregon's, you know, the rise of Oregon's football program at Autzen Stadium. And at the same time, it's not going to be, this game itself is not going to be a season-defining moment.
Well, and it's a little bit like the NCAA basketball tournament in that these sorts of games, only one team gets to cut down the nets at the end of the year, right? And, you know, in pro sports, like if you don't win the Super Bowl, you don't win the World Series, then your season's a wash, right? It's just disappointment. And I think one of the cool things about college is it's not necessarily that cut and dry. If you make a run to the Final Four, you may be disappointed, but it's a hell of a thing. And I think some of these games have a little bit of that in that, just winning national titles is really hard. So if you don't win a national title, but you look back on this year and let's say you win, you know, 11, 12 games, maybe you win a playoff game, but you fall short. while that will be disappointing, you'll look back at games like this and these sorts of wins. Not if you fall on your face and you lose four more regular season games, but games like this can define a season if you ultimately don't get your goal. And, you know, chances are you're not getting your goal because winning national titles is really, really stinking hard. So I've never done it.
I'm having a hard time buying that one.
No, you don't buy that? Let me ask you this. Go back to the year that you won the Fiesta Bowl, right?
Okay.
You're telling me, so, and I know it's different now that we have a playoff, but you didn't get your goal. You thought you guys were good enough to win a national title. And, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe you were, maybe you won't. You'll never get that opportunity. But you're telling me that season is a failure because you lost the game that kept you out of that? You don't think that looking back on that year and significant wins, including the Fiesta Bowl, didn't, while it may not be the year you wanted, you're telling me that doesn't put a different spin on that year and the memories that you had?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I just think of the Fiesta Bowl as like a singular moment, right? Mm-hmm. Had we lost that Fiesta Bowl, I wouldn't look back on the Arizona State game, or I wouldn't look back on the Wisconsin game. And even though we won the Fiesta Bowl, I don't look back on the Wisconsin game and say, God, wasn't that a great win against a national powerhouse? Like, I think of the Fiesta Bowl, and I think of the fact that we won the game. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know. I think we hit the point.
You didn't get what you wanted, though. You didn't. You didn't.
We didn't. No. You're right. And so to a certain extent, that season to me will always fall short. It was great. It was a fun ride. It helped propel the program to where it is now. It helped people realize that it was possible, that it was feasible for, you know, a team that had been in the bottom third of the Pac-10 for the better part of a half a century, that it was possible for us to compete. But I look back on that season even still and say, damn, one game.
Yeah.
Like, we were one game short.
Yeah, that's interesting because that win against Colorado, that was a program-defining win.
Absolutely.
That was a big moment in program history. Well, but to hear you say that is interesting because you were there, you played it, and to you it's like
I just wonder,
left undone.
I know we got a break, and I don't know anyone on that team. I'd be interested to know, to talk to, you know, a Dunze or, you know, Michael Penix. You want to talk about coming up one game short, right? Michigan. I wonder – When they look back on that, beating Oregon twice, you know, that's a regular season and a conference title game, huge matchup, biggest rivalry for either school. I wonder what they think of that season. Cause I don't know, I didn't plan that, but I something tells me that winning those two Oregon games were significant in the way you feel about that year. Even if you didn't get to where you wanted to go, you didn't win a national title. I think beating Oregon twice, I think changes the way maybe they feel about that season than if they had lost one of those games and still got to the Michigan game and lost. I think it changes the way you think of that season, but I'm in left field on that.
I think I can tell you how they feel about that season, which was, man, that was a lot of fun. Yeah.
But
damn, we were one game short.
Yeah. You probably always think about that one game. All right, we got a break. Joey Harrington is with us here, courtesy of Mods PDX. When we get back, where is the patented Joey Harrington worry meter set at heading into tomorrow? And how do the Ducks attack what could be the best defense in the country? That's next on The Fan. All right, we're back with Joey Harrington, courtesy of Mods PDX. Let's get into the game. His thoughts. Where is the patented and exclusive to The Fan Joey Harrington worry meter set at going into tomorrow?
Five and a half.
That's not bad.
That's pretty confident.
We had this discussion, if you're sitting at, you know, 6, 7, 8, it's like, oh God, we're in trouble. If you're sitting at, you know, 2, 3, 4, and, you know, 5 is kind of that middle of the road. The only reason I'm at 5.5 is because Oregon has not, from start to finish, put together the type of game that it's going to need in order to beat Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, the defensive performance against Michigan State, I mean, that was incredible. I mean, I have been waiting to see that defensive line play like that all year. I mean, that was exactly what you need. The running game against UCLA was incredible. Dylan Gabriel throwing the ball against Oregon State, fantastic. They can do all of those things. And, you know, they can – I'm actually kind of encouraged. You know, I was talking with someone about this. Like, Dylan is going to have to, at some point this season, put the team on his shoulders, take a risk, make a throw, right, be the difference maker. The fact that he threw two interceptions in the red zone last week, to some people is a little nerve-wracking. To me, it's like, okay – He's pushing that boundary a little bit to know how far, like how close can I come to the edge before I fall off? All right, I'm pushing, I fell off. Great, let me take a step back. Right, he knows where that edge is now for me. The reason I keep looking at this Ohio State team. You said coming into the break that this may be the best defense that Ohio or that Oregon will see. Maybe the best defense in the country, right? Yeah. Is that what you said?
Yeah. There are some that think it is.
Tell me why.
Here's the thing. Like, this whole game, you could just put a big old, if you had to put a parentheses around this game, it's that we don't know because no one's played anybody. But
right.
When you look at most metrics right now, and now, to be fair, the best offense that Ohio State's played is probably Iowa, and Iowa doesn't have a good offense.
That's what I was going to say.
But when you look at the number, I could say the same thing about Oregon, though, and Boise State carved them up. So I think that's what all you can point to is who you've played so far. And coming into the year, they said this could be a really scary defensive unit. And so far against the teams they've played, it's arguably the best statistical defense in the country. That's where that argument comes from, is preseason expectations have been met so far, but they've played nobody.
Okay, but here's the thing. Who, and maybe I'm wrong in this, who, if you're playing Eastern Michigan, right, who they played, or Central Michigan, and who, I mean, they played a couple teams at the beginning of the year, and I can make this argument, I'm very aware you can make this argument against Oregon as well, except for the breakout of the defensive line in Jordan Birch in the last game.
Sure.
Who on that defense for Ohio State is wreaking havoc?
Well,
they have one player in the top 50 in the country for both tackles for loss and sacks. One player.
Yeah. Well, Caleb Downs is probably their best player on the defensive side of the ball, and he's a secondary guy. And
but
then,
wouldn't you expect a defense that's supposed to be the best in the country to have some sort of standout against those smaller schools the first couple weeks? Right? Wouldn't you expect them to have a standout game against Michigan State? And yes, I will say they played phenomenal as a unit. But I think of so many times that these type of games are decided by a big-time player in a big-time moment. And that's what keeps leading me back to, like, you know, I love this, and this is probably just like this romanticized idea that I have of, like, game tied in the fourth quarter, and here comes Jordan Birch around the edge. Right, the guy that we've been waiting to see break out this year, and you know, and he did exactly that. Like, I love the idea of playing team defense, but I haven't yet seen, and I'm sure there's thousands of talented players or plenty of talented players on that team, but who's the superstar that's going to wreak havoc?
Yeah, I mean, Jack Sawyer is a guy that people really like. They have two really good defensive tackles. Again, Caleb Downs is arguably the best player on their team this side of the freshman receiver. But yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from. I think if you're talking to people about Ohio State, I think it's more of there's no weaknesses.
Right.
I think it's just,
and that's the point. Like, they're all, you've said so and so is really good. So and so is really good. So and so, like, they're all really good.
Yeah.
Like, that's, but But oftentimes it's that superstar that makes the game defining play.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking for. I don't know. I'm curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's an interesting element. Yeah. You could say Ohio State is more complete, but you could say that Oregon has more star power. You could say that. Yeah. I mean, certainly at quarterback, you know, Oregon has they have the better quarterback. They have a star quarterback as opposed to Ohio State, who I'm not saying Will Howard is bad, but Dylan Gabriel is better than Will Howard.
I think so.
Yep.
You mentioned Birch. It's interesting because there's a rumor he's hurt, will play, but is hurt. So that's an interesting element. But there are other guys. I guess in a game like this, though, if Ohio State has that guy, he's going to show up.
Well, and so
and it may be, be somebody we haven't named.
When I look at it, and they're not huge names, but they're two, and when you watch them, they're two defensive tackles. So it's Ty Hamilton, and the other guy is, I think it's Ty, I think they're both Ty. I think it's Ty Williams. They have two big people movers in there. And when I look at where Oregon may have issues and have had issues, even though solidified them over the last, handful of weeks, that to me, if I had to circle something, you said, where is the big plays going to come from? I don't know if big players are going to come from that, but if they're two big tackles can push the pocket and muck up that run game, we've seen it this year.
An interesting point.
That's where Oregon's going to have. That's where Oregon's going to have problems. If I had to say one matchup that worries me more than any, it's just that, because I'm not certain if the line has been fixed or if the line has played bad teams. And that's the one I want to watch. If the interior of the Oregon line can move the two ties and stay ahead of the chains, stay on target, I think Oregon's got a really good chance in this game. So that would be, and in defensive tackles, it's like, even in the national title game when they played Auburn, it was Nick Fairley made like 12 tackles, but you get defensive tackles in there and they can wreck things without.
And they just disrupt.
Yeah, they just disrupt. Yeah. So
they create. You get a defensive tackle in the backfield, he's going to create a throwaway. Yeah. He's going to create an incompletion. He's going to create a run of 0 yards. Yeah. Like that, that's an interesting point. Those are things that don't show up on the stat sheet.
Well, that's what Oregon's done so well. I love Oregon's defensive line. In fact, my favorite group so far, even though, the Boise State game didn't go great, I think some of that was run fit when I look back at that, the linebackers. But my favorite group, I think, that I've seen so far of any position group, it's been Oregon's D-line. I know there's no Haloti Ngata and there's no, Igor and some of the, they've had some really good D-line there, DeForest Buckner. But in the 20 years I've been doing this, I don't think I've seen a more complete defensive line. And you look at some of the D-tackles that came in transfer portal-wise, you want to talk about game wreckers. I think that's the most underrated position in football for wrecking a game plan. And it does, like you said, doesn't always show up on the stats, but just keep an eye on the defensive tackles for both of these squads. And the defensive tackles, the interior of the line that is controlling this game, something tells me that's going to be the difference in this game.
Smart man right there. Smart man.
Well, enjoy the trip to Eugene. And whoever gets to sit next to you is a lucky person. Yeah.
That's I'm not sure how to respond to that.
Well, I thought you were going to say that's debatable. Yeah. To which I was going to agree. But
is someone going to, like, imagine going to Autzen, you're just some diehard Duck fan. Like, imagine Schultz.
Yeah.
And you sit down in your seats and you turn and there's Joey. Yeah.
I think that'd be cool.
Yeah. Either that or really awkward for Joey.
Yeah, you probably hate that stuff, but other people are like, oh man, that's Joey Harrington. Should I say something?
It depends on who they're rooting for. It depends if they're cool.
Can you tell when someone's a little nervous? Like, they want to say something, but they're trying to build up the courage.
I just try and break the ice and just like, hey, what's going on? How you doing? I'm Joey. let's get this out of the way and let's have a good time.
Hey, I have a real quick anecdote question for you.
Go.
So we were at the coast a couple weekends ago, my wife and I, and we ran into a couple from Seattle. They were down dropping their kid off at Oregon. And so we got to talking to them, and the woman of the couple was asking my wife, she said, hey, I have a question for you. She said, somebody so-and-so, somebody of my family is neighbors with Joey Harrington. Mm-hmm. Now, she doesn't know that I know you or that, you know, she doesn't know me from Adam or anything. And she said, do you think it's okay? We have this debate all the time in our family. Can she ask him for an autograph? And my wife.
A neighbor graph.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I'm guessing you know this person. I don't know if you have deduced in your head who this person is. I don't know who this person is. But my wife said no. And they kind of got into it.
Really?
Yeah, my wife was like, yeah, no, I wouldn't really be asking for.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See, I would say yes.
Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal.
I think it's okay.
So the question is Joey, would that, does that bother you? I mean, would.
No.
Yeah, it's not a big deal, right?
Yeah. But I know all my neighbors. You know, I know, you know, I know everybody, you know, to say hi and have a drink on the porch. And our kids have been playing in the neighborhood. So it's not like it's like some out of the, you know, like knocking on the door out of the blue. Of course.
Right. Okay. Well,
I think context. See, here's my thing. This is my knocking on the door. To ask for an autograph, right out. Now, Joey taking out some trash, and that person lurking in the bushes and being like, oh, hey, happened to see you out at the curb, you know, friend of a friend, big fan, hey, could you, you know, that. See, I think context matters in this. I don't think you can go to the door to ask.
Well, no, it's right place, right time.
Right place, right time.
So if somebody...
Well, how about you shoot me a message and say, hey, my cousin in Seattle, like... Would you mind signing something? And I'd say, yeah, of course, no problem. Come on over. Let's, you know, let's have a bourbon.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Not a clue.
Okay, good. Well, if somebody comes and asks you for an autograph that you know, some neighbor.
Seattle. Then... Who would have family in Seattle?
See, how do you shoot you a message? I don't have my neighbor's numbers. I can't put it on a brick and throw it through your front window. No, I don't know any neighbors.
You don't have your neighbor's phone numbers?
No.
How do you not have your neighbor's phone numbers?
Really? Like, is that a thing?
Oh, my God.
I don't have any. Do you have your neighbor's numbers, Rob?
A couple of them, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn.
I mean, the ones that I know and I like,
I got nothing.
I mean, I even, the guy next
Abby,
to me.
Abby, Carolyn, Andy, Anna. Yeah, I mean, like, absolutely.
Well, you're an outcast, so.
Well, that is true.
Other Kimberly, normal people form relationships with their neighbors.
Interesting.
But.
John, Kirsten. Kitty corner across the street from me are the parents of a kid I grew up playing Little League Baseball against.
This says something about me, doesn't it?
He hit 17 home runs in a 16-game season. He was pretty dang good.
I'll be damned. You know?
We got to go. Ryan Buckley is going to kill me. He's literally going to wring my neck. Have a great time in Eugene, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Joey Harrington, courtesy of Mod PX. The future of building is here. Club 1080 is next on The Fan.